This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2017, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 4.
Well, welcome. I'm glad you're all here. And like I said, to those of you that are not teaching in a cross-culture school or setting at all, but are just taking interest in it, that's fine. I think you'll get something out of this as well. Once you're teaching somewhere, there will be things out of this that will apply. I'm teaching stateside right now. I have been for the past 4 years, but I taught in Grenada for 8 years, and so this topic is kind of special to me. It speaks a lot of, I don't know, where I came from in those years and a lot of things that I learned and things that I still maybe wonder sometimes what I could have done, or maybe sometimes I know what I should have done, things that I did right and things that I know I didn't do right. As I suspected, there's a lot of people here from an urban setting, and so I will say that I did a fair amount of research with this as far as talking to some teachers who have been in an urban setting. So a fair amount of this actually comes out of their experience, not mine. So I tried to kind of mesh those two together. I'll talk about a few things throughout here that we did in Grenada that probably aren't going to be acceptable in your schools here on stateside. Because of some of the differences there. So I wanted some input from outside. Before we get started, I think there's something that you should be aware of if you are getting into this for the first time, and maybe even if you're there already and you get a student that comes to you that it feels like no matter what you do, it doesn't get any better. And that is, you can't go into this with the expectation that you can be some sort of savior to all of these children. They're going to sometimes come out of situations where they have needs and hurts that you're not going to be able to. I'm not saying you can't do anything for them, but you're not going to solve their problems, maybe put it that way. And sometimes they have stories that are too hard to be helped just in a regular classroom. And here in the States, that's why sometimes children leave classrooms and end up somewhere like Bald Eagle Boys Camp or somewhere like that. Depending where you're teaching, you don't have those options. And so you sort of limp along and do what you can. And I believe that prayer goes a long way, and your efforts can go a long way. And sometimes some of those children that you thought couldn't be helped turn around and things change. But I think you do also need to release yourself from having to be that for them, because sometimes you can't. So I have a long list of suggestions. Don't try to put all of them to use at the same time. It'll never work. I tried to pull as many different ideas together so that you can latch onto hopefully one or two or a few that will be the answer for your situation. Not that I would ever expect that someone would do all of this. Actually, it wouldn't work to do all of them at the same time at all. I think we'll get started. I think I'll have a few stories probably as we go through. Maybe I'll actually start with one. My beginning years in Grenada, I taught second grade. And the third year that I was there, I had a student that was coming to me, and I knew that first grade hadn't been a very good year. I knew her family situation, and I knew that things weren't good. I knew her mom was not well. Her parents were not married, but they were living together. And her mom was not well, and so we found out shortly before school started that her mom was actually flying to Venezuela for treatments for her cancer, and so she wouldn't be there for the first 3 weeks, which meant that when she arrived, I would have to help her catch up from the 3 weeks that she had missed. I'm not even sure going into it anymore if we knew exactly how long she would be gone. I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly what we knew about that. Another thing that I knew about the family situation is that she had a younger brother, a baby brother, actually. That was her full brother, but then all of the older siblings had a different father. So they were also there in their home. So that kind of played into things a little later in the story. So Deanna showed up 3 weeks into school, she was a child that I believe probably dealt with some attachment disorder issues that were going on. Of course, she never ended up in any therapists or anything like that, so I have no idea what sort of labels they might have actually put on her. It was more what we observed and worked with. She was extremely emotional and would swing back and forth from being extremely happy to extremely sad or angry or... class time was very difficult. We almost couldn't have class with her in the room. The first 3 weeks she was back, she sat at the table with me so that I could push her through her work as quickly as possible to get her caught up with the rest of the students. But there were times where she just was kind of at the end of herself and couldn't do anything, and we couldn't do anything with her, and we tried just about anything we could possibly think of. Punishment seemed to do nothing. Rewards didn't seem to motivate her a lot. And it was kind of a constant classroom problem. Like, she was just a problem pretty much the entire time. Around Christmas time, or shortly after, her mom died, which would have left her with her dad. But the older children had been removed from the home because of what her dad, which was not, it was not their father, it was their, well, I don't know, it was not even stepfather, mom's boyfriend, what he had been doing to them. They had to remove those children from the home. So when the mom died, they decided they should take Deanna out of the home as well. They put her with a family friend, which seemed like maybe a better situation, but, you know, I didn't really see improvement in Deanna that year. We did all kinds of things, and it was very stressful. She did okay academically. She was pretty smart, but with everything else going on, she didn't really appear to do that well. I felt like she was getting what she needed. She moved into the next class, and we expected we'd have to expel her sooner or later. As she was getting older and larger in size, and it was more difficult to control her, we just didn't think it would last until she was in sixth grade. When she got to fourth grade, we had a one-year teacher come. And about halfway through that school year, things got so out of hand at the home where she was staying, the same place that they had moved her to right after her mom had died, that they sent her back to her dad. And you're like, well, what's going to happen now? I mean, we knew what kind of man her dad was. I never liked to be around school by myself when he showed up. But it seemed to be the right thing for her. She moved back, and suddenly she was with someone that she belonged with, not someone that she had been put in with. And on top of that, she really connected well with her teacher that year. And things really turned around, and she did a lot. There were still some issues, but she did a lot better for the rest of fourth grade. I had her again in fifth grade, I think it was, that she came back into. By that time, I had moved. Changed classrooms. I had her in fifth grade. She did well at sixth grade. They would take an entrance exam for secondary school, and that's when they left us. She did well on that. She got into the best girls' school on the island, as well as her other two classmates did as well. They always did better than she did in school, so we were a little surprised that she made it in there as well. Anyway, this past year, she graduated from secondary school, and I just found out recently that she did very well. I think she was noticed for, I'm not sure what award she got or exactly how high in the class she was, but high enough that we heard that she had done extremely well. She had done better than her other two classmates. To my knowledge, she's still living with her dad, which is probably not a good situation. So some of those things didn't change. Academic-wise, at least, though, she did do well, and it looks like she has some opportunities in that area for the future. So sometimes in the moment, it doesn't feel like what you're doing is making any difference whatsoever. It doesn't necessarily mean it won't have an impact or things won't turn out well. You know, of course, on the flip side, there's students that you have hopes for that you find out later they don't do so well. But I think sometimes it's nice to hear those, or now that I'm a little further away from it, to look back and recognize, like, sometimes we will not see the results right away. All right. to get started with the notes that I handed out to you. Like I said, we'll be looking at things that can fit for overseas or in urban settings. How does the cross-culture aspect influence your classroom? Well, I'm definitely not going to go over all of that. You figured some of that out yourself already if you've been in that situation. I am aiming most of this, or more of this, towards the children who come from non-Christian homes. So if you're looking at this and saying, well, just because they come from another culture doesn't mean they're not going to be honest. Well, yes, I understand that. And so if you're teaching at a cross-culture school where they're coming from another culture, but they all come from Christian homes, then some of this will not apply. On the other hand, if you have families in your school who are Christians, but they have come to the Lord recently, you know, they haven't had time to iron out all those things, the things that their children have already learned and been taught, and the family habits that are there, they're still working at those things. And so these things might come up. And of course, we know that children are not born Christians, so no matter what children you have in your school, you might have a few issues with some of these things anyway. If you have missionary children mixed in with your community children, don't think that they won't ever pick up on any of these habits. They will sometimes. Lack of honesty is probably one of the things, as I talked to different friends who taught in those situations, that they pretty much said, this is just a problem. And I think when you set up your classroom, it's good to set it up in a way that's not going to have a lot of, I don't know if stumbling blocks is the right way, but if you set it up too much depending on them being honest in all areas, you might be setting up problems for yourself. It might be better to set it up in a way that you're not depending so much upon their honesty. And that might mean changing things if you've been doing it in a way where certain things were more accessible to the students. You might have to change that so that you're a little more in control of certain things and the students don't have access to quite as much. Don't set up a reward system maybe where they have access to the tickets or the, we're going to talk a little bit more about all the things that you might use, but keep that in a place where you're the one who has the access, not them. Or in a way that you can actually check up on them. Maybe their names are written on things. Somehow that you can tell that one child doesn't go sneaking through everybody else's stuff and collecting, and there's no way to track that down. And I have some, we'll kind of, that'll be spread throughout some of these systems, but one of my friends talked about signing off on things so that her signature was on things, or keeping things in her desk. Also, don't assume, now obviously the longer you've been there, the more this will change, but don't assume that you know about their culture. This is especially for older students, but ask them questions. Let them share about their culture. Ask them what they're taught at home or what's important to them. And sometimes you might need to ask their parents or ask them what their parents would say about something. Now, of course, going with the honesty, they might be happy to tell you that their parents would be fine with something that they really wouldn't be fine with. But ask questions. And at times, when you realize that what you're used to is not what they're used to, step back and think about whether or not it needs to be the way that you're used to it being. Now, if it's a right or wrong issue, you're talking things from Scripture, I mean, absolutely stick with that. But if you're talking about how much noise is okay in your classroom and some of those aspects that might change depending which culture you're dealing with, you need to start figuring out how they learn best and going with that. And I'll be the first one to say that a noisy classroom drives me crazy, but you know, sometimes you have to be okay with some of that if that's what they're used to and it's working. Now, if it's not working, then you need to work at changing some things. I'm going to start with communication with parents. I'll be the first to say I don't feel like this is my strong point. I had a co-teacher or two who did an excellent job with this towards the end of my years there, and I feel like they made some progress in areas that I never was able to make. I know I taught with a co-teacher who just, we had a lot of trouble with the students being late in the morning, and she just made phone calls. You know, well, your child's late this morning. Where are they this morning? You know, I'm not seeing them yet. And And she just started making phone calls. And you know what? It changed. The students started being on time. And I think I was always like, well, they're always late. They're just always going to be late. And that's part of their culture. And I think some of both can be okay. But don't always assume that, well, this is just the way it is and they're incapable of changing. Maybe communicating with the parents and doing a good job of that will change some things that you didn't even think could change. One of the ladies that I talked to said she starts a year with a contract, something that she draws up. I think this is actually one. This comes from Baltimore. I have a few forms that I added that came from other, I think all of them came from other teachers. Yeah, maybe the second full sheet. No, sorry. It's the very last page. There's a code of conduct. And this is something that she would send home at the beginning of the year so that there was an understanding of what she was expecting in her classroom. The child signed it, the parent signed it, and the teacher signed it. And that was something she could go back to and say, you know, we agreed upon this. And obviously, depending where you are, the different points that might come up, and maybe parents aren't always going to be in agreement, it's good to have that understanding from the beginning. It would lay out for the parents what you're expecting in your classroom, and you could be, you know, add things to this or take away as, you know, as it seems fitting for your situation. Another friend said, and she said she always tries to send one good text message to each parent about their child before Thanksgiving. Now that takes a little work, especially if you have a bigger class. She said, I have gotten a lot of miles out of that text message. She said, after they got one good text message from me, you know, about something that their child was doing well, they were so much more receptive when I had to call about something that wasn't going well. And I have never tried that actually, but I think that was a wise idea. One of the things that I dealt with when I was in Grenada, and I'm not sure how that is now or if it's changed at all, but and that is the parents all had phones with these little chips in, and they were just always changing their phone numbers. So every time you went to get a hold of someone, they weren't there anymore. So that kind of, if you deal with something like that, I'm sorry. It's just, you know, it just makes it a little more complicated. And I don't know if you can convince them not to lose their phone or something. But yeah, if you have a good way to communicate with them, it will be helpful. If not, it just means more work. There's just really no way around that. Another idea, actually, that the same teacher had at their school, this actually comes from New York, from the Followers of Jesus school. If they're having a severe problem with a child, they will, when they're getting close to the point of expelling the child and telling them they can't come back anymore, they'll probably meet with the parents or talk to them on the phone and tell them that if they want their child to stay in school, they are going to have to come into school and sit with them for a while. And I think from what I hear, that's usually effective. You know, perhaps sometimes parents refuse to do it and they do expel the child. But yeah, that has gone a long way. Having parent-teacher conferences is one thing that you can do. And some teachers, some schools, they include the child in the meeting, and some of them they don't. I've never been part of a school where we included the child, but one teacher mentioned that by including the child, it didn't allow the child to try to set up the parents and teachers against each other, because they were right there and you were all there. Everything that was said was heard by all, and you know, then of course you have to be willing to say exactly what's going on in front of the child, and you have to be honest, because if you kind of, you know, if it's a little hard, sometimes it's easy to sugarcoat things a little bit when the parents get in. It's a little hard to say really how bad it actually is. Well, if the child hears you doing that, that's not going to work real well. So you got to be pretty honest in that situation, maybe hold you to honesty as well. Of course, there are times where you need to discuss something the child shouldn't hear, especially maybe a younger student. You know, maybe there's concerns that you have that you don't want the child to hear, and they can be sent out for that. Obviously, if you do this, you want to make sure you bring praise and correction to the meeting, and I think that should happen anyway. The child's there, they should hear both sides and know that you are on their side, but that you're expecting some better behavior. Ask the parent for suggestions. I know when I taught in Grenada, I felt like this parents often were asking me for suggestions. Well, what should I do at home? I don't know what to do at home. And, you know, I didn't always have the answers for that either. But at least try to get their thoughts on that. Maybe they'll have some, maybe they won't. Might depend a little bit on that home situation. And sometimes parents will react to something about your expectations because it's really foreign to them, to their way of thinking. Try to find out what is it about that they don't agree with you, and then try to determine what's best for your class. One of my former co-teachers, who's in Grenada now, said she's just been having some issues with, actually it's a teacher who started expecting the students to be on time, and she kind of started setting up consequences if they're not on time. And some of the parents and even some of her co-teachers that were Grenadian reacted to that a little bit. Like, well, how can you punish them for being late? Like, that's not fair. It might not be their fault. Well, maybe you need to turn that around a little bit, or try to find out, like, are there valid reasons why they're late? And maybe you need to turn it around. Maybe they get a reward if they're on time rather than a punishment if they're late. You know, they might react to that better. And at times, maybe you just do need to drop a certain expectation if it's causing too much of a problem and it's just something you can deal with and it's just something you need to, you know, let go of it, and it's not the ideal, maybe, when you have students arriving late, but it's just, you know, it's not an acceptable thing, apparently, in this culture to expect them to be on time. I need to let this one go. I wouldn't let that one go too fast, but, you know, at times, you're going to have to just let certain things go. On the other hand, I know sometimes we ran into that with a parent who said, you can't punish them for lying, everyone lies. Well, I'm not okay with that, you know. I think if they're going to come to our school, and we have a Christian school, then we expect them to tell the truth, and if we find out they're not, they're going to get a punishment. If they don't like that, at that point, they can find another school. You know, once it's biblical truth, and there's places there where you just need to stand your ground and say, well, this is what we do here. Are any of you teaching in a public school setting? No one here. Okay. Because obviously if you're in a school where the school itself is not Christian, you're going to have to deal with some of those things a little differently, but I don't think we'll discuss that a whole lot today. Affirmation. These students that come out of homes, not that no non-Christian homes affirm their children, but typically there's a lack of it. So obviously don't use empty flattery and make things up and, you know, say things that aren't true, but affirm them often. They really need to hear the good job and thank you for doing that, and I'm glad to see you here today, and thank you for making today a good day on their good days. Another thing you can do is celebrate each child sometime throughout the school year. And again, I have an attachment on the back. This comes from Baltimore as well. This is ideas for their birthday. Apparently, they actually make the birthday child student of the week, and they do activities surrounding this child all week long. Maybe this depends how many students you have as to whether or not you're going to celebrate a child for an entire week. But I thought there were some great ideas of things you can do to celebrate a child's birthday. When I was in Grenada, we supplied the cake for every child's birthday. Now, we only had about 6 students each, so that worked out a little better. If you have 20 students, maybe you don't want to start that. I would say don't start something you can't complete. So, you know, whatever you do, make sure it's something that you can follow up on for the rest of the children. I made sure they got a little birthday gift. Birthdays were kind of important in Grenada, but sometimes the parents didn't always. The parents liked when their birthday was celebrated, but they didn't always do a good job of turning around and celebrating it for their child. So I'm not sure quite how that works. In some ways, they didn't seem important. In other ways, they seemed really important. But take that time. You know, you can celebrate a child on their birthday whether they're well-behaved or not. I feel like that's something you can give them. No matter what their behavior is like, they don't need to lose their birthday party or their cake or whatever it is that you choose to celebrate them with. All right, if you are going to have students that come from homes that aren't very good, actually you need this in any classroom, but you have really got to have some sort of system in place when you get your year started. Don't get your year started and say, well, I'll figure out how I'm gonna handle my classroom after the year starts. And that won't work in most classrooms. But to be honest, right now I teach in a school where the children are all coming from Christian homes. And obviously the homes vary a little bit. And I have a system, but you know, I almost don't even have any sort of system of punishment because I don't actually need it that much. It's, you know, I have a reward system and there are a few things that will happen if they disobey, but it's not as structured because I don't need it. It's they come from good homes and they've been taught well and they come to school and they know what's expected and they're still children. They still need it sometimes. But I don't need to be as intentional about it. When you have children from homes like this, you need to be very intentional and have a plan set up step by step, exactly what is going to happen, and they need to know about it. So here are some ideas. They need boundaries. They need to know what they are. Now, don't make lists and lists and lists of rules. You'll probably have to add some as the year goes on. But have a system, and I think it should be based on rewards wherever you can rather than lots and lots of punishments. But you're probably gonna need to have both parts. And sometimes teachers choose to mesh those two. You know, this is gonna become more and more and losing out on it is also part of the punishment. And sometimes they sort of have two separate ones. So you can decide a little how you wanna do that. For younger students, you might use something tangible. These are some ideas. Happy sticks, which were popsicle sticks with a smiley face drawn on the end. Magnets, tickets, tokens, pennies, something small that they can see. Again, you might choose to have them at their desk or you might choose to have them at your desk, depending how that works or how close tabs you can keep on everybody's things. The idea in here is that you would give three, I'm just going to use happy sticks as my example here. Give them three happy sticks a day. One lost maybe is just a warning. Nothing happens, it's just a warning. Second one lost is some of their recess time. A third one might be more serious consequences. We'll talk a little bit more about what consequences you might hand out there later. And perhaps if they keep all their happy sticks and don't lose any, they get two M&Ms at the end of the day. It's actually amazing. I gained that from a co-teacher in Grenada, who handed out, they weren't called M&M's and Grenade, they were called Cheers, but they got two little Cheers. These were third graders at the end of the day, if they kept all their happy sticks for the day. And you would think, well, what third grader cares about two little M&M's? But they were pretty important to them. They really looked forward to them. The sweet thing seemed to really connect with them. And on the other hand, I don't think you're gonna spoil their teeth over two M&M's either. One of the other teachers, and I think this is in the back, used a weekly color-coded behavior chart. This was something that actually went back and forth. I think this is one of the first attachments that I added to the back. And you can kind of look over that, but it actually went back and forth every day. I've never used that. I think you would only want to use that if you have parents who do a good job of returning things to school on average. Like, I'm not sure that that would have worked in Grenada. I'm not sure that the papers would have come back. So, you know, you might have to weigh that out a little bit with, they did go home in a folder. They didn't send a bare paper home. That's not usually a good idea. And maybe this would be a good plan with an individual student. You know, a few of you mentioned you have kind of a normal average classroom, but you have one or two students. You know, if you're starting to run into problems, maybe this is something that could happen in any classroom where it would go back and forth and the parents could keep tabs. I thought, you know, if you have a parent, it's a situation where you have a foster child in your class or something where it feels like the parents are very supportive maybe, but the child has a lot of things to work through. This would also be a good option in a situation like that. One of my friends, and I've seen this done, again, I've never used this, this would probably be effective mostly in the very younger grades. They had kind of like a green light, green, red, and yellow, that was up in the front of the room, and every child had a clothespin attached to it, and if things were not going well and you needed some sort of reprimand, they or you would go move that clothespin maybe to the yellow light or to the red light, and usually there were consequences for that, maybe going back to their desk during activity time or, according to what had happened. For older students, again, it's often still good to have something tangible that they can get their hands on, something that they see growing or diminishing according to their behavior. Maybe tickets would be a little more, tickets or tokens would be a little bit better idea than happy sticks or magnets, perhaps. And there, instead of having rewards at the end of the day, you can usually wait a little longer. Maybe it's tickets that can be saved to the end of the month or the quarter and spent for privileges and prizes. There's a chart that I have attached here for one of the teachers used this. I think this comes from New York again, where being on time or having homework completed, I forget what the no minutes was, maybe for recess. Not losing any time for recess, I'm not quite sure what that was. Having a clean desk, they earned money. They also had to pay some rent for their desk. Just kind of an interesting little, you know, math lesson thrown into her behavior chart. And she would sign off on all of these. So if they'd be on time, they had to bring their paper to her and get her to sign, I guess, when they got there. If their homework was completed, she'd sign off. So her signature was all over this. It was a little more difficult for them to say, well, I'm just going to, I don't know if they could forge her signature or not, but hopefully she would have remembered that she hadn't signed it. And at the end of the week, they had payday. And she would, they'd add things up, take out the rent for the desk, and add up what was used. So that would definitely be a good one for older students. And once again, similar to the tickets, she had some sort of shop where they could buy things at the end of their month or quarter. Sometimes I think she had homework completion in here. Deciding whether or not you're going to include homework completion into your behavioral kind of setup, you might have to decide how you want to handle that. Sometimes teachers do that as a separate aspect of it. Sometimes it's all thrown in together. I think either way can work. Sometimes I often like to keep it together just simply because I don't like to keep track of too many different things. Other methods, again, I think these might be a little better for younger students, but depending what they're working for, your older students will like them too. Sticker charts or punch cards could also be used. Maybe the punch card, you want to have your own special little butterfly punch or something, and if the older students learn how to use a hole punch in the classroom and you're not there, that might not be a real great idea depending on your classroom, but that would also be one. Also, you can use a class-wide motivation. I would often use this if there was a particular aspect of behavior or just something in the classroom that I thought they needed to work at. I mean, this could be anything from handwriting neatness to being on time to being quiet during class time, having an argument-free recess, cooperating during project time, just whatever you think they need to work at. Pick something and then set up a little thing. One thing I had done was I had a whole chain of paper clips, and every time, to be honest, it was long ago enough, I don't remember what we were working at that time, but everything they did, I think it was being quiet in class, but every time we had like a quiet class period, I would move a paper clip to the other chain, and when they got all the paper clips, then there was a reward at the end. I think maybe they each got a piece of pizza for lunch that day, well, probably the next day or something. You can use cotton balls in a jar, cutouts on the wall, just, again, something tangible usually helps, even if they are a little older. All right, looking at some rewards. Make rewards and consequences happen quite often. Okay, well, don't make consequences happen unless you need them, but make them a little more immediate, perhaps, than what you would do in your average classroom here. And obviously, the younger your students are, the more immediate they should be. Don't try to make your first graders, okay, not that you can never make the younger students wait on something that they work towards, I think that can be good, but the general setup of your classroom discipline for first grade should not be earning tickets to buy things at the end of the month. They're not going to get there. Unless you have smaller things along the way, perhaps that could be the big thing at the end, but yeah, they're not going to do real well with that probably. Also, one of the teachers mentioned that she likes to actually change her reward system a couple times throughout the year. So if you go by quarters or trimesters, maybe switching things up and actually sort of changing things a bit to re-energize them and make them more excited about what you're working for. Where I'm teaching right now, I use a ticket setup and they earn tickets and then they can earn, it's mostly privileges. There's a few prizes that they can get, but it's mostly privileges that they're working for. Well, when we get to fourth quarter, when the quarter's over, they can't use up privileges because they're not there anymore. And so I totally turn the fourth quarter around and they're working together as a class to earn a pizza party. So think of things like that that you can kind of throw in there to grab their attention and make them work at something. Especially if you notice things are starting to wear thin with what you have set up. Figure out what they love, and that's going to be different in every place. I know my friend from New York mentioned that they just love cookies. And she would bake cookies and keep them in the freezer, and their rewards were very, very often were cookies. It was something they couldn't get on their own. They didn't bake cookies at home, but she could bake cookies. And so that was a real, that would really get them. I know in Grenada, they loved pizza. Like, they also liked food or candy or something unique that you brought down from the States that they couldn't get their hands on. That was something that they would go for. So pick up fun stuff when you travel. If you're from overseas and you come back here, get things while you're home and take them back. If you're teaching in an urban setting, but your family is somewhere else and you always go to visit them and there's things that you can pick up there, that can be something great. And it might be good to show them what the rewards are ahead of time. Show them the store, open it up, and don't let them buy anything at the beginning of the year so they see what they're working for. Also, set up your reward system carefully so you don't accidentally find out that you're going to be spending a lot more money than what you thought you were because they're able to earn and earn and earn and earn and it's growing and you have no way to stop this. Start smaller at the beginning of the year and then build as the year goes on and their patience is wearing thin and they're getting tired of being in school. That way your rewards can kind of grow with their need for incentive. I have some privilege ideas here. Free drink or bathroom passes, no shoes day, draw on the chalkboard, choose the story time book, extra story time, extra recess, a free test or quiz question, odds or evens homework assignment, do the homework assignment with a friend, computer time, choose the recess game, choose the review game, go first for lunch, or use the teacher's markers or pencil crayons. Those are some things that don't have to like cost you a lot of money. They might give you a little bother sometimes, but if it happens only once in the quarter, it's probably not going to be a big deal. Consequences. Some children need a warning that is not going to have any consequences. And you'll find this, especially with children that are, struggling a little more. They might do well. They think they're doing well. You might not think they're doing really well, but they might be working towards it. towards keeping all their tickets or pennies or whatever it is for the day. And they're not doing real great, but, they're trying. But then they start talking and they lose that first penny. And some of them will just simply fall apart right then and there. And it's all over, They lost their penny now. And why are they going to try? And it might even escalate into a temper tantrum or whatever on the spot. Well, you can't avoid all of that because you can't, if they're not going to obey and they get consequences, that time will probably come sooner or later. But sometimes it's good to have a warning built in that is like, this is your warning. I am actually taking your first ticket. Nothing happens. I'm just taking a ticket. But you need to change your behavior or you will lose the second one. Of course, you know, if they are in a fight with a classmate or hurting someone, you know, you go out around all the warnings and do what you need to do. I remember having the discussion often with co-teachers in Grenada and some that were much older and more experienced than I was, and we all kind of agreed that you would walk past a classroom and you could just hear that impatience coming out in the other teacher's voice. And Grenadians are very loud. They're very much in people's faces, and I actually think to be there and teach well, you need to actually do a bit of that in order to get their attention sometimes. They're not actually upset by you getting loud. But as you walk past another classroom and hear another teacher doing that, sometimes you would think to yourself, well, just, you know, chill a little, like, don't get so worked up over whatever's going on. But you know what? You walk back in your own classroom, and after a while, you heard yourself doing the same thing. So it is, yeah, you're surrounded by it all the time, and you will have those times where, where you feel like you've had a little more than what you can take. And so I think there are times where you just simply need to move a child to the office or a hallway and say, I will be back later to take care of this, because you know that right then you're not going to handle the situation very well. And so give yourself that space if it's needed. Now, if you are the principal, you can't do this, but sometimes I think it's also the right time to turn it over to someone else for a time. Maybe it means that you're saying, can this child come sit in the office for a time? I will be back in a bit when class is over and I will take care of it. But obviously, lashing out in anger at the child is never going to be helpful. So whatever you need to do or whatever space you need to give so that, you know, that doesn't happen, do that. Also, sometimes the child needs time to calm down and regroup. Sometimes they just simply, you know, fall apart and they need a little time to pull themselves back together. And then maybe they will actually handle the punishment that's still coming better. And that's where getting to know the children is good, because there are other children too who are not going to pull it back together until they receive their punishment and they can just move on. So learn to know your students, and you might need to do, to change that a bit. Sometimes losing privileges, especially for older students, is a good consequence. Have the child call their parents in your presence and tell them what they did. That's usually makes them a bit subdued. But that does depend on the parents. Although I've heard parents who didn't react very well still, that can still be effective. I would say, I don't really know what the answer is to this, but there are times where you know that the parent actually is not going to respond well, or they are going to lash out in anger, and that becomes really difficult because you do want to keep them in the loop of what's happening. They do need to know, but neither do you like the idea of your student receiving, you know, anger from their parents either. So that can be a little difficult. I don't feel like I have a good answer for that, because that's kind of the parent's problem to deal with, and you're not always in control of that at all. Detention. Avoid as much as you can keeping the child in for the entire recess. Maybe they need to lose a minute at a time. There are times where you just need to take the whole recess, and maybe they will learn. But if this is a child who you have chronic problems with, and try not to make them lose every recess. Don't make them lose every recess. Find other things you can do. It probably, if you're doing this every day, it probably means it's not working anyway. So, you know, do something else. Have it when they lose recess that they actually lose half of their recess. Maybe take a minute at a time or take half of it. It can actually increase your behavior problems if they're not getting any recess time and any chance to go off and burn some energy and run around for a bit. Maybe they need an after-school detention. This always feels like a bit of a punishment to the teacher, too. because then you have to stay and take care of them for that time. But sometimes that is a good idea. Keep them after school. Give them maybe work to do. I remember having a student, certain students stay and sweep, and he was pretty sure he was done after 5 minutes. I was pretty sure he couldn't have possibly ever swept that hallway good enough to stop at that point, because I knew he needed something to do for the entire time in the hall. Well, our hallways were outside, so there was always dirt to be swept. So I made sure that his job lasted the entire time that he was there, much to his dismay. But that can also be a good consequence, and one that the parents will have to be made aware of, so that gets the parents in the loop again on this one. If you live in a place where the parents are going to have to come pick them up, that steps up the level of consequence really far. But it can still be a good consequence if there's a serious problem. Now, I wouldn't go to that one. If it's not a serious problem and the parents are going to have to come to school to pick them up, make sure that they actually did something to earn that sort of consequence, because I'm sure their parents are not going to be real pleased to have to come in and pick them up. Practice. If they're having trouble following a classroom rule or procedure, make them miss something, or maybe recess or something else where they have to simply practice that procedure. They can't do something quietly. They can't line up when they're supposed to. Whatever it is that they're not following, just make them practice that procedure. They might feel like you're being really silly, especially as if they're a little older student. But you know what? If they couldn't do it in class, then they can practice it and they can show you that they know how to do it. Meet with a parent is another consequence. I included spankings or lashes. I'm guessing if you teach stateside, you're not going to use this. I don't know how many of you are going to use this overseas, but we did use this in Grenada. It was a culturally acceptable way of punishment. I know that's changing there a little bit, and they're a little more cautious how often or how they use it exactly. But if you're in a school where that's allowed, you do need to have some sort of school-wide protocol for how it's handled. You should have a witness there. It should be documented. You should have the parents in the loop. They should know that this is how the school handles things. Possibly, if it's something that's done very rarely, then the parents need to be notified actually every time it happens, depending how that's done. And of course, it should never be done in anger, in a way that's going to actually hurt the child. So use that carefully, and only if it's something that your school has decided that your school will do. Some other helpful ideas. These are a little bit random. Some other random ideas. One teacher I talked to had what she called the tattletale tiger. She had, I think, a tiger hanging in the back corner of her classroom, and for those students who kept coming and arguing over this and that, this is probably recess disagreements, little disagreements between students, she'd say, "You two," it was both the offender and the one who was offended, "you need to go tell the tattletale tiger about it." And the two children would go back, and they were expected to stay there until they had worked out their differences. And I think on rare occasions, she had to step in and help them sort it out, but usually they were able to come through and come to some sort of agreement. That was a teacher who worked in a public school system, so she didn't maybe have as many options sometimes, even as we do. That one hurting child that just disturbs your class. You're probably going to have these at some time or another. Sometimes you can use an individual incentive. You have to be careful how you do this so that the rest of the class doesn't feel like somehow you're giving rewards for bad behavior. But it can be effective if it's done carefully. So that might mean keeping the child after school or in at recess to discuss it. Perhaps sometimes it could be a reward that actually comes from their parent. That would be one way of handling it. Or a reward that comes after school, something the students are not going to see. Visit that child outside of school. Actually, visit all your children out of school would be a great idea. But definitely those children that you're having issues with, stop by their home and visit them. Go see them on a Saturday. I had a student in my last year there that just had a lot of issues. And her home, thankfully for me, her home was at a place that I could take a really nice walk and end up at her house on a Sunday afternoon. So many Sunday afternoons, I just took a walk and went back there, and I ended up with a really good relationship with her parents. It's one of the first places I go when I go back to visit, and she's always really happy to see me. And I think that was very helpful. And I've had some other troubled students who lived in a location where I just couldn't easily get there, and I'd never went to visit them because, yeah, my transportation options didn't get me there very easily. Try to find out what's causing their misbehavior or their emotional instability or anger. Try to find out what's going on at home. Sometimes you'll find out, sometimes you won't. One of the students that I had a lot of trouble with, she was very sullen and angry. She wasn't usually very happy at school. I think it was in my last year there. I never did find out what was wrong, but I did find some things out in the past year or so that had been going on at her home, I think, for many years. That probably is what was going on. She wasn't going to tell me. So looking back, I'm thankful that I extended as much grace to her as what I did because of what was going on in her life at that time. It's nice if you can find out, but you won't always. Try to consider carefully, I want to do number four here. Have a spot outside the classroom where they can diffuse, think, or work in solitude. You can't always control that. Some schools are small and you don't really have space for that. Some children will think this is a punishment and some will think this is a privilege. But I actually had a child at my school where I'm at this past year who needed that. Sometimes I just simply moved him out of the classroom and said, I'm giving you some space to work out here where you don't have to have the rest of the class there. And he handled that well. He didn't always get his work done, but he at least wasn't disturbing the others. And I don't think he saw that as a punishment. Consider carefully if you're dealing with effects of their home or if you're actually dealing with some sort of learning disability. Sometimes there's a learning disability there that's causing the frustration. And if you come from a small school in an urban, well, depending how big your school is, sometimes you're not really set up to take care of that problem. But at least if you have an understanding of what you're dealing with, at least it helps you be understanding, I guess, even if you can't solve the problem. If there's testing available, maybe suggest that the school or the parents pursue that. And in times where you realize that things are going on at home or outside of school, sometimes there is a time where you need to get extended family, a pastor, even the police involved, the right people. Stand up for the child when you know. If you live here in the States, or at least in Pennsylvania, I think it's true across the states, as teachers, if we find out that something is going on at home that definitely should not be going on, or even outside of home with maybe another adult, we're required to report that. And I think we need to do that for the children and be there for them and get them the help that they need. Overseas, sometimes you're not sure who to turn to in those situations, but do what you can with that. And if class cannot continue with the child in your classroom, there are times where you need to expel them for the sake of the rest of the class. One teacher mentioned that she likes to diffuse the situation sometimes when the child is like, I don't want to do this. She'll give them options like, well, would you like to do the assignment with your crayons, or, you're going to do it with your crayons or with your markers? Now, if your classroom rules, you always do your work with your pencil. I wouldn't walk in and say, well, do you want to use your crayons or markers? But, when they have options already, give them some. Put your pride aside. And if you start something with your class that is not working, try to wrap it up as quickly as you can and try something else. Don't hang on to that and say, well, this is what we're doing. I can't change it. Love them well and insist that they respect you. Use a firm voice and make yourself clear. If you walk in and mumble in front of them, they probably won't listen that well. They're yours for a time. The students will remember how they felt in your classroom more than what you taught them. One of your highest goals should be providing a safe place for them and insist on kindness among classmates. Punish unkindness and bullying in a way that they know that someone is sticking up for them. It might be the only safe place that they have. So I would make that as one of your highest goals, that your classroom is a place where they can come and feel safe, that they know someone cares. And blessings to you as you go to those classrooms with some extra challenges. I got permission from all of the people who sent these forms to me. You're welcome to use them. You're welcome to take them and modify them. I do have, if any of you would like the form on as a, you know, on your computer, so you don't have to retype everything because you like one of these, I do have permission to email it to you. My email address is basically my name. It's miss.amy.zimmerman@gmail.com. So if you're seeing any of these forms that you're really interested in, you could email me and I'll be glad to just send those forms along to you. miss.amy.zimmerman@gmail.com. Make sure you're clear what you want, because I told one of my other classes that they can email me for forms as well. So make sure you tell me which class you were in. Yeah, I'll be glad to get those to you. So thank you for coming.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.